Lynn Fisk, Forest Division Chief.
Good morning, folks. Brian Pugh, I serve as the Deputy Division Chief for State Forest.
Kathleen Sullivan, a Clatsop County Commissioner.
Go ahead. Let's go into the audience. That's fine.
Ray Jones, Spence and Lumber.
Dave Ivanoff, Aspen Lumber.
Seth Barnes, OFIC.
Rex Storm, Associated Oregon Mines.
Corey Airfield, Department of Forestry.
Todd Heron, Department of Forestry.
Cindy Colomacho, Department of Forestry.
Shannon Lawsonmaker, with Oregon Department of Forestry, North Cascade District.
Go back to Justin.
Sorry, Justin Buttress, Policy Analyst for State Forest.
Thank you, Justin.
Good morning, I'm Mike Cody, West Oregon District Court.
Mark Rasmussen, Mason, Bruce, and Gerard.
John Lindsay, Lynn County.
Will Tepper, Lynn County.
And John Sweet, Coos County.
And who do we have on the phone?
Just hold music.
Just hold music?
Just hold music.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you so much.
And I was did y'all get a chance to introduce yourselves as well?
Yes, well, we did not.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm JC Lally. I'm with the Public Affairs Office here at ODS. And Heidi Gensch. I'm Executive Support here at ODS.
Great. And Bob?
Bob and I, proxy.
Thank you very much. So I'm hoping everyone had a chance to look at our last minutes, October 26th of 2018. That was the last meeting of this program. Anyone have any concerns, or do I hear a motion?
Move approval.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Moving on. Let's do public comment. Do we have any public comment?
No.
Okay. no one wants. Okay, perfect. So I'd like to start the meeting with just a few remarks. I know in the past we've had some concern, some consternation actually, about the ability of FTLAC members to really have an open discussion with the department from time to time. I've been in contact with our county council, who's been in contact with John DiLorenzo, and I think we've kind of resolved the issue to a point. FTLAC members and many Council of Forest Trust and County members have received some items from me, one of them being the Lynn County class action lawsuit. And that is the main reason in the past that we have not been able to really have open conversations with the Department of Forestry and the Board of Forestry. And I think in many respects that has been an issue for us. We still have to be very careful in what we say. But if you read over the materials, especially the complaint, the Lynn County complaint, and the response from the board from the department, you get an idea of the issues involved in the Lynn County class action lawsuit, and begin to understand the areas that we really need to be careful about discussing. There are going to be more of those things coming up. And I'm hoping that will give us some direction and allow us to have a more open discussion at these meetings at the same time. With that said, I do want to talk about a disclaimer, and I think I'm going to do this at the beginning of each meeting. So, due to the ongoing litigation with the Lynn County class action lawsuit, during the course of this meeting, the chair and or vice chair might interject to identify statements that should not be construed as approval or direction and does not reflect the views of the Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee nor the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties and shall be so identified in the minutes of this meeting. Again, I think that's just going to help us make sure that we don't say things that we really don't want to interject into the discussion. I'd be more than happy if any of the board members have any comments on that. Kathleen?
Yes, I understand your point of view being part of the lawsuit, but Clatsop County is not part of that lawsuit, and I want to feel like I can speak freely and present our point of view. So I understand that I am not in the majority here, but I do think that I still should have a voice. So I don't know if you all discussed that or...
And so I think what we're doing here is we want to make sure, and so your comments that we feel are out of line with the Linn County class action lawsuit, I think we will just identify those in the minutes as being your points of view, not necessarily the points of view of the Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee and or the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties.
So if I may, it sounds to me like because of your participation in the Linn County lawsuit, you are saying that FTLAC policy is right in line with it. That seems like that should be separate, that the duties for the FTLAC is different than adhering or not adhering to a lawsuit that's currently in the courts.
Well, the way I would look at this is that all of the Forest Trust counties, except Clatsop County, this is what the Linn County class action lawsuit is all about. I am going to hold the responsibility of being chair, and I'm hoping Commissioner Sweet will do the same. There are things that we may gavel down and stop discussion if we feel it is not helpful to the Linn County class action lawsuit. I think when we take a poll of all of the Forest Trust Land counties, I'm sure they would probably tend to agree.
I'm just wondering, because I just was newly on the commission, I was newly elected at this time. Did this body vote one way or the other on the Linn County lawsuit? I thought that this action was outside of this body.
And I will take that up with my legal counsel.
Okay. I don't know if it makes any difference or not, but it seems like there are a number of issues that we can talk about that. If I may, what you're saying is starting the meeting with a disclaimer is in a way saying that there are other things that we can talk freely about. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So, Kathleen, I think what I'm saying here is that this will allow this entire board to have a greater discussion. Mm-hmm. I mean, we certainly can go back and just say in the beginning that, you know, that this board should not be discussing things which that are concerning the Linn County class action lawsuit. And that's what I'm trying to get away from, to have a more open discussion. But again, we have to be careful. If we're going to take this to the extreme, then perhaps we're going to need to go back to that original, the way we've been doing things for the last 5 years. And I'm trying to get away from that.
I would appreciate that. I would appreciate that. And I understand that from your point of view, and I can respect that. I just hope that you can also respect my point of view.
Sure, absolutely. And that's why we appreciate Clatsop County coming back to the table.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be back.
Okay, very good. So, moving on, and again, we are going to keep to the timelines, even though we started a little bit late, and I do apologize for that. So we're going to go right into updates. Forest Management Plan update with Liz Dent and Justin Burris.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Also, speaking to the Forest Management Plan work today is Mike Toady. Raise your hand, Mike. And Brian Pugh. So we're all here at the table to tag team this and let you know where we are. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good.
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Jim Bernard. I'm the chair of the Clackamas County Commission.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, so our intent today is to provide you all with a briefing on the material that we'll be bringing to the Board of Forestry on March 6th. And our goal here is to make sure you have the information that you need as an advisory body to the board to be able to relate your input to the board at March 6th. So that's our intention here. Want to make sure that you're able to ask questions and look for clarification as we go along. And we'll just keep track of the time. And if it starts to feel like we kind of need to keep things moving, David's going to help us do that.
We'll okay. I'll do my best.
Okay, great. So, as I introduced myself, I'm the State Forest Division Chief, and our intention today is to give you an update on where we are with the Forest Management Plan and our work with the Board of Forestry. Is this my forward tool? Oh, how about that? That's all right. Is it obvious what I do? Like just
I already got this.
This one is that. Okay. This is your first slide. All right. Copy. Yeah. Okay. All right. So for today's presentation, we're going to start by recapping what happened at the last Board of Forestry meeting where we talked about the Forest Management Plan. That was in November of last year. They asked us to speak to what we would identify as barriers in the current plan and any proposed changes we would have to address those barriers. They also asked us to provide an overarching vision, so we're going to go over that with you today. And then in the January Board of Forestry meeting, during our agency administrative financial dashboard, they also asked us to come back with an update from a financial perspective on what's been going on with state forests. So starting with recapping the November board meeting, we did, you'll recall, present a draft set of goals, strategies, and measurable outcomes. So we discussed those with you all. We also discussed them at a public meeting after our meeting with you during that time. So we presented those to the board, and the board asked us to do a couple of things. They asked us to bring back this information on what we think are the barriers to achieving improved conservation and financial outcomes, and again, to characterize an overall vision for the plan. And so that's what we are going to be doing today. Again, we're going to tag team this. So I'll turn it over to Justin to start our conversation around barriers.
Thanks, Liz. Oh, you already switched.
Okay. So the direction from the Board of Forestry for the FMP project is to improve financial and conservation outcomes. The majority of the goals and strategies that we've been working on have little to no differences compared to the current plan. But at this stage, we've explored a few key differences and are going to spend the next few minutes highlighting each of those and how they're expected to improve financial viability, conservation, or both. So the first barrier is that the current FMP does not adequately address climate change. Issues such as drought, fire, forest health, or other ecological issues can be exacerbated by climate change. By incorporating climate change principles, we can better address major disturbances or catastrophic failures, and help to ensure long-term productivity of state forest lands and certainty in long-term financial outcomes. Conservation outcomes are expected to be improved by developing resilient, healthy forests. The second barrier is the lack of clarity on the trade-offs between harvest goals and habitat goals. The current FMP focuses on creating structure and doesn't set clear expectations apart from a predictable, sustainable flow of timber. The absence of goals, strategies, and measurable outcomes that guide harvest decisions can result in less than optimal decisions being made on the trade-offs between habitat and harvest. Inclusion of harvest goals, strategies, and measurable outcomes is expected to improve conservation outcomes in some areas and financial outcomes in others. And next, I'll turn it over to Mike, who's going to discuss the next few barriers.
And you've got the clicker for me, thanks. Good job. So, continuing on this. We've talked about structure-based management for a number of years and implemented it for some time. If you recall that within structure-based management, there's five discrete categories, if you will, that we try and manage for across the landscape and develop over time. One of the challenges we've seen with that is when you have these very discrete things, it really lacks the ability to recognize that as stands grow and develop, they're on a continuum. The stands don't automatically go from what we call closed single canopy to a layered condition or to an understory condition, things of that nature. So we've seen that as a barrier for quite some time. So this often doesn't adequately really even address or recognize how stands grow and structure grows and elements over time. So the use of those categories can lead to silvicultural approaches that are costly and ineffective at times. So I would, and I don't know how much time I have to expand on this, but I would just when we first started with structure-based management in the field, we were trying to take oftentimes very simple stands. So, and by a simple standpoint, I mean a single age, single species out there introduce complexity in a number of ways. Some of the strategies that we tried over time were heavy thinnings and underplantings. We tried creating patches and openings and introducing other species that way. All those types of things relative to more traditional forest practices, forest management practices, are very expensive to do. Vegetation management in those types of situations are really complex and difficult to do, challenging to do. Anytime we introduce complexity and challenges, it typically drives our costs up. So those are costly types of silvicultural things. The results of those things, so as we were essentially experimenting with some of these practices, silvicultural practices out on the landscape, is trying to figure out, are we actually achieving that goal, that structure type we had in mind. So I'll give you an example. If we had an older stand, if you can visualize a pure, almost pure Douglas fir stand, fairly dense, and those crowns have lifted over time. Now we go in and we do a heavy thinning in there. It's got a vegetation component underneath. So we have to do something with that. That's competing with seedlings we put in there. We introduce shade tolerant type species under in that understory, western red cedar, western hemlock, grand fir, things like that. And now, in order for that to meet that definition and these strict categories that the plan has, those actually have to fill up that void, if you will, that space between the ground and the canopy itself. And we're introducing species in a really complex environment and a very competitive environment. So they're growing in the shade, they're competing for light, nutrients, things like that. It takes a really, really, really long time for those things to grow. So much so that in a lot of places we found it'd probably be faster to essentially start over, push the do over button to do it that way. So just wanted to kind of point out some of those experiences we've had as we've moved through. Selecting the goals based on habitat definition.
I'm sorry, can we have a quick question here, please? Kathleen?
One of the goals of the structured base is to have a more varied multi-layered forest. After years of your experimenting, are you finding more efficient ways, or are you still learning as we go?
We always continue to learn in forest management, silvicultural practices, but I think one of the things we've really determined that over time, I think we could develop those things. It's just cost prohibitive for us in a lot of situations to do that. The time for us to get there and the cost of doing it, as I've learned, on the West Oregon District specifically, have been much longer and much more expensive than they just do. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll think about it. Thank you.
Yeah. I think, and we'll touch on this in other places too, you know, and I think maybe Justin's going to touch on the complexities and challenges with just inventorying and measuring those types of things, and frequently, inventory and understand is a stand older forest structure or layer is a pretty complex thing to do, a challenging thing to do. Once again, I talk about complexities and challenges, that's going to drive our costs up. You have to have a really intensive inventory system to even to mark when that transition occurs, how we count that, if you will, on the landscape. Oftentimes in places where we have naturally occurring species variation, species diversity, the within-stand variability is higher than the between-stand variability, if you will. You can walk into a stand, look one direction, and it looks like a beautifully layered structure. You turn on 180 degrees in that same stand, and it's not. And how do you inventory something with that kind of variability through it? And that, once again, has been a challenging thing. We've identified, we've tried different relative indices, if you will, to kind of identify those things, and we continue to kind of have to tweak and change those over time.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Crystal. Next barrier turn. Targets for structure types are currently set at a district level, and so that really kind of it doesn't play well. We're looking regionally across how we're growing and developing structures and types and that. We've painted ourselves into a corner with each district having its own set of structure goals there. So it really doesn't account for that regional context of the habitat. And we can have a disproportionately high feel the regional approach to achieve a range of habitat conditions and conservation outcomes can reduce costs and some of those inefficiencies and increase our financial viability.
So go from a district management to more regional?
Yeah, please recognize those types of things in that landscape context. So if you look at some of our scattered track type districts, like the West Oregon district and some of those, you know, if you have a quarter of the section, 160-acre parcel, buried in 20,000 acres of federal land that are all in successional reserves, perhaps there's different ways we can manage that and take advantage.
So it's both, so it's both thinking about it across our ownership, but also where the surrounding ownership and what sort of conservation benefits we might be able to augment in what we do and take advantage of the conditions of, that are surrounding our ownership. And that can slice both ways, where if there's a later serial structure or older forest conditions right next to our ownership, we might, you know, try and target our ownership, our adjacent ownership, to add to that. And there may be, it could also be the reverse. If we're surrounded by younger stands that are being managed by private ownership, there may be a conservation advantage to providing some older forest structure there. So that ends up being a broader way of thinking about how we can provide those conservation benefits.
So to think in whole systems rather than inside
that
space.
And that's particularly true, as Mike said, for the districts where we have more scattered parcels. So that also includes Western Lane down outside of, in the Bonita area outside Eugene. Those are classic places where we're working with that.
Thank you.
I appreciate that there, too. That's, you know, and as I articulate that, I'm talking landscape-level things, and that means across ownerships, across management. The last one I'll touch on here before I turn it back over to Justin is we've talked quite a bit about restoration needs, particularly in areas like the Coleman Burn there, challenges we have with Swiss needle cast, over-mature red alder stands. And structure-based management does not lend itself real well to addressing large-scale restoration needs like that. So we feel like emphasizing forest restoration will improve our long-term financeability and conservation there as well. So, you look at short-term financial availability when, or the finances of doing that, when we start doing restoration, those are expensive things to do. Some of those situations may not pay for itself in the short term, but over the long term, that investment in getting those stands healthy and growing will certainly pay for itself.
Great.
No,
thanks, Mike. So the next barrier that we've identified is the shifting mosaic requirement. So the plan describes a dynamic mosaic of slowly shifting stand types as a core feature. This concept of growing older stands and then replacing them elsewhere in the landscape may work when coupled with an incidental take permit, but does not work well with the current approach to avoidance. Additionally, to maintain a given percent of the landscape and stand type, there must be some amount greater than that percent before the shift can occur. So that leads to temporal and spatial complexities. Removing the shifting mosaic design will improve financial outcomes and will also enhance communications and expectations with regard to management of the state forest lands.
Justin, I think we might pause there for a minute.
Sure.
We talked, the shifting mosaic concept is a big part of the current forest management plan, and Justin touched on the challenges relative to if we're using take avoidance or if we had a programmatic compliance tool such as an HCP, that's an incidental take permit. But I'm wondering if we just need to spend a little bit more time describing that shifting mosaic concept or if everyone's comfortable with that, what that means and what it means in regards to the permitting.
I would be happy to hear some more.
Okay. So the notion of the shifting mosaic, as Justin said, is that if we're targeting, as we are in the current plan, 30% of our landscape to be in complex structure, the shifting mosaic concept is that as we create older stands somewhere else on the landscape, we'd be able to come back in and harvest.